Seven major candidates are seeking the Democratic nomination for governor in the August 11th primary, Phil.
August 11th? That's less than 4 months away.
Yeah, and 64% of Democrats in the latest Marquette Law School poll say they haven't decided on a candidate.
Is none of the above in the lead or haven't decided?
Haven't decided is in the lead, but will not win. One candidate who just might win is Kelda Royce, Madison's state senator and former assemblywoman, who before that ran the statewide organization protecting abortion rights.
She ran for governor 8 years ago and finished third behind Tony Evers, who is now leaving office after two terms.
We're going to talk to Kelda Royce about her candidacy and why she's the best Democrat to win in November on today's Center Stage with Milford and Hands, the Wisconsin State Journal's political podcast from the sensible center of Wisconsin politics. I'm Scott Milford. I'm the opinion editor for the State Journal.
I'm Phil Hands. I'm the editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal.
And we are two-fifths of the Wisconsin State Journal editorial board.
The more undecided two-fifths.
Kelda Royce, welcome to Center Stage with Milford and Hands. You're running for governor. I've known you a long time. You've been in politics, gosh, more than 20 years. What would you cite for the voters of Wisconsin as some of your biggest accomplishments?
Well, I would start with expanding Badger Care to 80,000 previously uninsured Wisconsinites. As somebody who knows what it's like and how scary it is to go without health insurance, I think that is life-changing. When somebody's got access to affordable health care, that will change the trajectory of your life. I also helped to pass Wisconsin's first pro-choice law in a generation, the Compassionate Care for Rape Victims Act, through an anti-choice Republican-controlled assembly. My partner in that effort, along with many others, was our newly elected Supreme Court Justice, Chris Taylor. I helped to pass some criminal justice reforms to prevent wrongful convictions, helped make Wisconsin one of the first states to ban BPA, helped expand access to rural health care by allowing nurse practitioners to practice independently in Wisconsin. So a lot of things that I've worked on, a lot of different issues over the years.
You said you didn't have health insurance at some point?
Yeah, after law school, you know, before the Affordable Care Act, if you were a young person and didn't get one of the sort of brass ring jobs with a great benefits package, it was pretty difficult to find health insurance, right? There was no Obamacare, there was no exchange. You couldn't stay on your parents' health insurance past college. So, you know, I'm 46. So in my 20s, when I didn't have health insurance, I was just like crossing my fingers and hoping I didn't get hit by a car. And fortunately, that wasn't, a particularly long period in my life. And I was healthy, but, you still are anxious, right, about things. You brush your teeth really, really, really well because you cannot afford to go to the dentist.
I actually do remember shoveling snow in my 20s. And thinking to myself, man, I don't have health insurance. Better not hurt myself doing this.
Absolutely. Like riding my bike with crazy drivers.
So you're one of seven candidates, I would say, major candidates on the Democratic side running for governor of Wisconsin this fall.
Let's not discuss what major and minor is, Scott.
But it's only basically 4 months away. And 8 years ago, you ran for governor. So this is your second time. You finished third. You got 13% of the vote. So I guess I'm wondering, what's different this time around?
Well, a lot is different this time around. Number one, we face a grave threat from not just an incompetent and bumbling Trump presidency, but from a really dangerous and autocratic Trump regime. And that is probably one of the most significant things that our next governor is going to need to reckon with, and to try to protect us from those many harms that are coming down from Washington. We also are going to have an opportunity to build what comes next, because we can't just go back to the broken, limping along democracy and economy that we've had before, where all the gains go to the people at the very top and everybody else works harder and longer and struggles to make ends meet. We have to create a different paradigm. And Wisconsin does have this beautiful progressive heritage of really being on the forefront of so many great movements and policy achievements. And I believe that we can help build a better world after Trump. And that our next governor didn't have the chance to do that.
What's changed for you politically, though? I mean, to go from 13% to probably needing, well, Evers got 40-some percent when he won it. What's changed there in terms of you and how you win this?
Sure. Well, I mean, in 2018, Evers was, the popular three-term statewide DPI secretary during the Walker years when public education was clearly under attack. And, you know, he, I think, was always very likely to win that race. I stepped up, even though I had been a two-term assemblywoman and I had been completely out of politics for 6 years. Remember, I started a small business. I was running my business. I had my first two babies. I was basically knocking on doors and raising money for candidates. I was still involved in politics and in the movement to be a helper, but I was not, you know, in front of the cameras in any sense. I was so upset, though, to see so many people stepping forward and know that Roe v. Wade was going to be overturned and to not hear any of the men talking about it. And the one woman who was a serious candidate in that primary was not pro-choice, and that was unacceptable to me. So I'm really proud of that campaign that we ran. We put Medicaid expansion right at the center of our campaign. We put public education and how vouchers were hurting our public schools right at the center of that campaign. And we put defending abortion rights under the Trump regime right at the center of the campaign. And we made those really important issues that, you know, the Evers campaign and now the Evers administration has really, responded to. And I think that's important. Now is a very different race, right? There's no Evers in the race. It is wide open. The vast majority of voters don't know the candidates, or even if they do know them, they are undecided. They are not supporting them. And I have been in the state Senate for the last 6 years. I am the candidate that has the most experience in this race. I'm the one that has over two decades of bipartisan track record of actually passing laws, right? I'm the candidate that can actually say, here's what I've done, not just here are my ideas that I've never been able to accomplish. And so it's a very different situation. And I have much more institutional backing. I'm much better known because of the work that I've done in the state Senate and my long history working in politics.
You are fairly well known, although according to the Marquette poll, Mandela Barnes is recognized by 64% of registered voters who identify as Democrats. You're at 23. So, I mean, 23%, about a quarter.
Yeah, actually, you know, kind of surprised by that because it wasn't that long ago that we all spend our blood, sweat, and tears trying to get Mandela elected to the state Senate. And it's still heartbreaking that we were unsuccessful in doing that.
Is he the guy to beat?
Yes. I mean, the guy to beat is honestly Tom Tiffany. To be clear, the guy to beat is Tom Tiffany. Yeah. Tom Tiffany cannot be allowed anywhere near the governor's mansion. And even if you are a Republican, we deserve to have somebody in the governor's mansion who is an independent thinker and not somebody who's going to be a rubber stamp for Trump. And the problem with Tom Tiffany is that he is not his own man. He will do whatever Trump wants him to do and has never demonstrated the ability to think for himself or break with Trump in any way. That's kind of the opposite of me. I have demonstrated again and again a lot of independence. People know what my values are. I'm a progressive Democrat. I believe in health care for all and public education. I believe in your rights. But I also have demonstrated that I can cross the aisle. And if I think the Democrats are doing something wrong, I will speak out.
What's the time you stood up to the Democratic establishment and said, no, this is not the right thing to do. We need to take a different approach to this.
Well, my very first term in the state assembly in 2009, which was the last time Democrats had power, I launched an effort to try to get the 1849 criminal abortion ban taken off the books. Unfortunately, that was not successful. And I was also part of a pretty broad group of Democratic legislators who wanted us to pass a fair maps bill, right? An independent redistricting bill that would have prevented the gerrymandering that then happened in 2010. In recent years, for a long time, I was the only Democrat on a bill to expand access to healthcare by allowing nurse practitioners to practice more independently. And the governor, my governor, Evers, vetoed that bill several times. And finally, we were able to get enough Democratic support alongside the Republican support that we already had. And the governor signed that bill into law last year.
We'll jump into some issues in a minute, but unfortunately, let me stick with the horse race for a second. in the Marquette poll, Francesca Hong actually won it. She was at 14%. You were down, I think, at 1%. And that was just voters that knew they were going to vote for somebody. So nobody's way out in front. But what do you make of that, that Francesca actually won that, got some attention for that? It did surprise me a bit.
You know, it didn't surprise me at all, because polls are really a reflection of whose name you've heard. And the way that you get your name heard is to spend money. And most voters, as the Marquette poll showed, are not paying attention at all. They are not, unfortunately, they're not listening to your podcast. They are not reading my press releases, and they are not dialed into this race. They are living their lives, right? They're dealing with the end of the school year onslaught and not thinking about a primary that's going to happen in August 11th. Mm-hmm. So as voters start to pay attention, that is when it is important to be spending your resources on the communications with those voters who are not yet dialed in. Because those are the voters that are going to determine who wins this primary. And, you know, keep in mind that all the candidates were almost completely within the margin of error, 6.5 percentage points, I think, was the margin of error. So only Mandela and Hong were slightly outside of that margin of error. And this is truly a wide open race, right? A lot of different things are going to happen.
That's a really good point. And a lot of times when they report the margin of error, if it's 6%, it means 6 up or down for anybody, meaning it could actually be 12%.
Right. There's a big tolerance. And, you know, we don't even really know who's going to show up to vote yet, August 11th. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 months ago, if you would have said, oh, our country is going to out of nowhere just bomb Iran and start a dangerous war in the Middle East that destabilizes things and causes gas prices to skyrocket, you know, we would have thought, no, isn't our country too smart for that?
I assume you're going to have to dominate Madison, though, to win the nomination. You're going to have to dominate your home turf, and you're going to have to beat, obviously, Francesca Hong by quite a bit.
I think that voters in Madison appreciate the work that I've done and the policy leadership that I've shown on the issues that are very important, and also the political work that I have put in, not just helping put the legislature in the place where we are now poised to win a Democratic trifecta for the first time in 17 years, but also the work I've put in to flip the state Supreme Court, to give us a path to fairer maps and to strike down that 1849 abortion ban. I think, you know, voters in Wisconsin in general appreciate those aspects of my record and my leadership. And they also want to make sure we have a candidate who can beat Tom Tiffany. Right. They want someone who reflects their values, will stand up to the Trump administration, will fight for the things that we believe in, but also someone who can win. And I don't think voters are, you know, confused about how important that is.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that Francesca Hong can't win this election?
I think anybody that's been watching politics that would make a declarative statement like that is speaking out of turn, because politics is unpredictable. But I do think that there are certainly easier paths and harder paths. And I think that, you know, WEAC support for my campaign is a reflection of both the fact that I have the most experience, have been a very effective leader and a champion for public education, and that I am a candidate that has that rare combination of a path to win the primary, a strong chance to beat Tom Tiffany, not a weak one, and the experience to actually capably govern the state during what's going to be a very pivotal time.
You bring up WEAC, which that is a big endorsement for you in this primary.
It's the teachers union, basically.
It's the Wisconsin educators. And you know, there are teachers in every single community in this state. WEAC is certainly the most significant and pivotal endorsement that's going to happen in this Democratic primary. Considering that Barack Obama is not going to be endorsing anyone, we would imagine. So this is a big deal, both because they are very politically savvy and politically powerful. And they also backed Jim Doyle and Tony Evers in their respective primaries, helping provide really critical support that helps them win their primaries.
And I assume some of your kids are in Madison schools?
Yes. All of my kids were, are, or will be in Madison Public Schools. And I, of course, proudly graduated from Madison East High School, although I started my school days in rural Taylor County in northern Wisconsin.
In that Marquette poll, 91% of Democrats who said they have registered to vote said that they were very concerned about inflation and the cost of living. So I'm wondering, as governor, what will you do for people's pocketbooks, particularly when schools are a big chunk of the property taxes and you're the teachers' union choice?
Yeah, property taxes are way too high, and that is a direct result of 3 decades of Republican legislators starving our public schools and our local governments of the state funds that they need to have to function. And so then you have these local governments and schools basically begging their neighbors to raise our property taxes to keep the lights on and keep teachers in the classroom or keep, you know, keep the park open. And again and again and again, communities want to invest. People in the state want a high level of service. They want excellent public education. But if the state isn't paying its fair share, that is going to fall on property taxpayers, and it's making it unaffordable. To your other question about affordability, mm-hmm. we need to do 2 really key things. Number one, we have to raise wages for Wisconsinite. We've got to raise the minimum wage. We've got to restore collective bargaining rights so that people have more money in their pockets. It is not acceptable that with all the productivity gains and the fact that we are working harder and longer and more efficiently than ever, those gains are going to the people at the very, very top. And those folks are paying far less taxes than the rest of us, right? It's completely unjust. And we have to deal with the fact that the private voucher scheme is taking billions of dollars every single budget out of our public schools and putting them into the pockets of private, unaccountable voucher schools that can discriminate against kids, that don't have to follow the same rules, and it's totally not transparent. So you get that property tax bill and you think, here's what's going to the public schools. Not true. A huge chunk of that money is going into private voucher schools, you know, most of which is to subsidize wealthy parents who already had their kids in private school before the vouchers mm-hmm. came.
Isn't Act 10, whether it's repealed by the courts or by, say, the Democrats taking over the state house, isn't that, though, going to cost some more money? Because presumably with arbitration, teachers will have more say, and probably that means higher pay and better benefits.
Well, my hope is that teachers will have higher pay and better benefits. But that's because I really want good teachers to stay in the classroom. And unfortunately, what we have is a huge teacher retention crisis, because teachers have not effectively gotten a raise in 15 years. And in fact, are making far less when you take into consideration inflation than they did or they would have. So, you know, there are things that we can do in the state budget to help school districts and local governments save money. And in fact, my healthcare plan is designed to help do that, right? To help save money by letting everyone participate in the state employee health insurance pool at a lower cost for that high quality insurance. But ultimately, trying to balance our budgets on the backs of teachers and property taxpayers has been an absolute failure. And when I hear people brag about this multi-billion dollar surplus that we've had at the state level year after year for the last several years, it makes me kind of mad, because honestly, that is money that has been taken away from our kids. And I feel the impact when I'm in my kids' classrooms. I see how the educational opportunities that they are getting are not the same as what I got as a little girl in rural Wisconsin 40 years ago, and as a teenager in Madison. It is not fair that our kids are paying the price.
If you had a magic wand and there's no Republican legislature to push back on you, what's one big thing you'd like to get done for the state of Wisconsin?
Wow. Well, I would say, you know, the biggest thing is to lower costs for families on the big ticket items. It's housing, healthcare, childcare, and utilities. And I have detailed plans for each one of these, but ultimately, Wisconsin needs to be a place where young people can see that they could build their future. They need to think that they could go to college or pursue job training or a career. They need to think they could buy a house. They could afford to have a family if they wanted to, and maybe even save for retirement. Those things should be basics, and yet they seem really out of reach for young people. And that is one reason that we are seeing a demographic crisis in our state, with the state population graying and young people leaving the state for better opportunities elsewhere. So, you know, my goal would be for Wisconsin to be a place that young people want to flock to, because they believe it's a place where they can thrive.
And what's the most important aspect to getting young people to have faith in Wisconsin then? Is it cost of living? Is it cost access to insurance? Is it education? What do you think is the key thing that keeps young people here?
I think it is cost of living and opportunity, basically. The ability to buy a house, start a business, pursue higher education, afford to have a kid. Those things, I think if you talk to folks who are millennials and Gen Z, which I do a lot, they are doing everything that they are supposed to be doing, right? They are earning good grades, they are working hard, they are getting job experience, and they think, I'll never be able to afford a house. There's no way. They're worried about AI coming in and taking the jobs that they might have spent 4 years working hard in college to do. I mean, I wonder, you know, Phil and Scott, do you worry about AI trying to take your jobs?
Can't replace me with AI.
Well, I know, can't replace me with AI. though I'm sure we're going to see some Republican ads that give you some fake Kelda Royce clips, just like they did with the other governor races that we had last year.
Is that not illegal at this point?
It is not illegal. If you use AI to generate content in a political ad, you have to disclose it, but it's not illegal, unfortunately.
Oh.
It should be. Somebody should write a law about that, huh?
Yeah.
If only we knew somebody in legislature.
Yeah. Well, I have written more laws to regulate big tech and its abuses than I think any other legislator this session.
You know, I think I agree with you that you'd probably be the most effective voice when it comes to reproductive freedom, given that I remember meeting with you 20 some years ago. You were the head of NARAL, which is now the Reproductive Freedom Group. I can't think of the name.
Yeah, Reproductive Freedom for All.
But you were a leader in the legislature on that issue. You're a mom, but abortion is legal, and 56% of Democratic voters in that poll said they were very concerned about it. That ranks 7th out of 10. In other words, maybe that issue isn't even close to being as big as the affordability. So how much, you know, where does that issue rank with you? If it's 7th with a lot of Democratic voters, is it 1st with you, 2nd, 3rd, 7th, 10th, what?
No, listen, I am a busy mom and I can juggle more than one thing and I can care about more than one thing, and voters do too. Voters care about affordability. Voters care about their rights. Voters care about their kids being safe in school from gun violence and from bullying. Voters care about the violent assaults on our communities that we're seeing with these illegal ICE raids, and voters care about housing. I think that knowing that there will be a governor that is going to stand up strong and protect our rights, whether it's our civil rights, whether it's our reproductive rights, whether it is our elections and our right to vote or our freedom to speak and protest as Americans, all voters want that, and especially Democratic voters during this very dangerous and scary time of having the Trump regime in control.
How much of this race is going to be about Donald Trump, even though he's not on the ballot?
Well, at a time when he absolutely dominates the news cycles and there are new outrages every day, speaking of being able to care about multiple things at once, you can care about the war in Iran, you can care about how illegal tariffs are bankrupting our farmers, and care about the health care cuts that Tom Tiffany has imposed on his own constituents. I think that Donald Trump is going to play a huge role in this race. If for no other reason than the fact that Tom Tiffany is his yes man. And I don't think Wisconsinites want that. We value independence in this state.
Why are you best to beat Tom Tiffany when you look at the other 6 major candidates for Democratic nomination?
Because I've been standing up to and beating bullies and billionaires for my whole life. I'm not scared of these guys. I'm not intimidated. I know what my values are. Now, they're going to attack me with all kinds of ridiculous liberal tropes, the way that they attack every Democrat. But look at who our most popular and successful statewide elected officials are in the state. Do you know who the number one most popular is of either party?
Tammy Baldwin.
You got it. Tammy Baldwin. And who just won the biggest electoral victory, I think, of our lifetimes in the state?
I didn't know there was going to be a quiz.
I'm sorry. Come on, you know this.
Barack Obama won huge.
Chris Taylor just won by 20 points.
But she's not a Democrat. She's a nonpartisan judge. I don't understand.
Bill, let me help you here. So Tammy Baldwin, Chris Taylor, and I have a lot in common. We were all tagged or could be tagged as Dane County liberals, right? And by the way, so could Tony Evers, Russ Feingold, and Jim Doyle, right? Our, you know, most recent senators and governors that we've elected statewide. We're all lawyers, right? We've all are experienced legislators who have strong progressive values, but are very capable of working across the aisle. In addition, Chris and I are moms who have worked in the abortion rights movement. So I fit the mold. I fit the profile of the kinds of candidates who can win statewide. I'm also the candidate that actually has a foot in rural Wisconsin from my, you know, young days, and in urban and suburban Wisconsin from the district that I now represent.
You grew up in Marshfield, is that right?
I was actually born in Marshfield, but no, I grew up in rural Taylor County outside of Medford, Wisconsin, which is north of Highway 29.
Okay.
So I would be the first governor in, I don't know, 4 or 5 decades from the north.
You brought up school vouchers. In the past, we've favored honing in the governor's veto pen. And kind of predictably, with this constitutional amendment on the ballot, all the Democrats, they don't want to limit the veto when there's a Democrat in office and vice versa. But in this case, I get why Democrats liked Tony Evers' quote-unquote 400-year veto, because it steered a lot of money to schools. The constitutional amendment would make it impossible for a governor to unilaterally use his or her veto pen to increase spending or fees. The Democrats all seem to be not wanting that amendment, but I think, what about if a Tom Tiffany did win? What if he increased spending on school vouchers for 400 years?
By doing something in the budget.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of a risk to not try to hone this in when there's a chance.
Yeah, I don't love that Wisconsin has such an expansive veto power. We have one of the most powerful governorships in the country. And I think there's a very legitimate question as a lawyer that I'm kind of academically interested in, as to what is the appropriate balance of power between the legislature and the governor's office. We are in, obviously, a real hangover from the Walker years, where the legislature just gave so much power to Walker and gave him layers and layers and layers of political appointees and got rid of civil servants and civil service protections and all these things that are supposed to help government function for the people of Wisconsin rather than for the politicians. But I think it's problematic to for Republicans to selectively say, well, you can't use the veto pen to increase spending, but you can use it to decrease spending. I'm actually fine if voters want to limit veto power. I think that's reasonable to do. I don't think it's reasonable to do after you've just gone on an unbelievable binge of giving huge amounts of power over to the governor. And then Republicans are now having a little bit of remorse because they have a hard time winning statewide elections.
When the Democrats file their fundraising numbers in July, will you be at the top of the pack, the middle of the pack, or the bottom of the pack?
I will have the resources that I need to run a campaign that can win this primary. I put the fun in fundraising.
Oh, boy. So no answer to that question then.
Yeah, I mean, you know, truthfully, I don't know. There is no one who knows, because these numbers are not going to become public until the middle of July. What I can tell you is that my fundraising is strong. It is enthusiastic. And I feel very good about our trajectory and our ability to have the resources that we need to win. Obviously, we have the best democracy money can buy. And we should just really be honest about that. You know, politics is not a meritocracy. And people, you know, unqualified people win office all the time. Rich people can dominate elections. And people with a lot of rich friends. You know, if you look at the fundraising reports, you can see the vast majority of my money came from Wisconsin-based grassroots donors, right? Individuals who live here, who care about the state, who care about its future, and want to see Wisconsin led by someone who has the experience and the electability and the effectiveness to be a good governor. My campaign is not funded by people writing me $20,000 checks from New York and California.
Where do you fall in the Democratic Party's friction between the progressive wing and the more mainline Democrats? Where would you peg yourself there?
I am a consensus builder. I definitely have some strong progressive values, right? I support healthcare for all. I think it's just crazy that we ration healthcare in this country based on your job and your wealth. We spend more per person on healthcare than any other developed country, and yet we have worse outcomes. We die quicker, we're more sick, we have crazy infant and maternal mortality rates. To me, that's just like does not compute. So I think, because I have stances like that, people are like, okay, she's a progressive. But I'm also someone who has spent a huge amount of my time, my energy, and my resources working to elect Democrats across the state of Wisconsin. I believe in a big tent party. I go on right-wing radio. I go on, Northern Wisconsin conservative podcasts, the same podcast that Tom Tiffany goes on, because we have to go to places that Democrats often don't feel comfortable going. We have to listen to people who disagree with us, and we have to welcome them into our coalition. We are not going to win, and we are not going to be successful if we are a party that hunts heretics instead of a party that cultivates converts. So I'm a person that will respect you even when we disagree. I will try to find common ground, and that's why I've been a very effective legislator working in this extremely divisive and partisan environment. Of all of my friends in the Democratic primary, I'm the one that can say, I've got more than 20 years of actually passing bills in every type of legislative environment. You don't have to look at my plans. You can actually see the track record here. And I think Wisconsinites value that. And I think it isn't really about ideology. It's about your effectiveness and your respect for others and your ability to lead and build consensus.
When you're out on the campaign trail across the state, because you need to get your name outside of Madison, let people know who you are, what is that like when you run into, say, a bunch of diehard Trump supporters? Is Wisconsin nice still a thing? Are they polite? How does that interaction go?
I would say overwhelmingly, yes, it is. And I really make it a point. I will go to a supper club and talk to folks at the bar. And I start with curiosity. I think that's you're never going to go wrong if you actually are really genuinely curious about someone. And sometimes they'll see my little name tag or, they'll see a button on my purse or something. And I just say, how's it going? What do you think about that news on the TV? Or, I'm running for governor. And what do you think is important? What would you like to see from your next governor? And if you actually you do the like Emily's List trick of you ask a question and then you take a sip of water so you're not, immediately jumping in with your thoughts, you can really learn a lot. And what I have found is that a lot of folks who might identify as Republican and even some folks who voted for Trump are very open to having a conversation with me and supporting me. And that's why I'm proud that the only affinity group that I really have for my campaign is Republicans for Royce, right? It's this group of folks, many of them have left the Republican Party, but they still identify as having conservative values. They want someone that they can trust as governor, and they don't want a Trump lackey.
When you talk to those Trump voters in rural Wisconsin, what is the issue they want to vote for? What's the most thing? What's the most pressing issue to them?
Affordability, the cost of living. And I think the instability as well. I mean, it also depends a little bit on where you are, right? Agricultural communities are hurting mightily because of not just the illegal tariffs, but of course the workforce implications of his violent immigration raids. I mean, that affects not just farmers, right? Not just dairy, but also cheesemakers, also construction, also tourism, right? So many of Wisconsin's biggest industries that power our economy rely on immigrant labor. And it's been very, very difficult for rural communities to weather this Trump economy.
You went to UW Law School, right?
Yes, I did.
So you're a Badger. I'm a Badger. Phil went to graduate school there. We love the Badgers,
My
but
son's accepted at UW.
Hey,
our
congrats.
editorial opposed that almost $15 million a year for the athletic department. It just seemed like the football program in particular is making more and more and more money from TV contracts, and now they need more taxpayer money was I just don't know how that computes. Anyway, I was happy to see you voted against that.
Yeah.
Why did you vote against that? Because the Democrats were kind of split on that. I think some just thought, hey, any money for UW is good money.
Well, Scott, she read her editorial about it. That's why she voted against it.
Of course.
I just do whatever Scott Milford tells me to do. God forbid. Listen, I love the university, and I think it is criminal that we spend more on corrections, incarcerating people in the state, than we do on public higher education. Over the last several years, we have shut down over half a dozen campuses in the state and closed the doors of opportunity to young people. I just can't imagine a more stupid or short-sighted thing to do than that, if you actually want higher wages in Wisconsin and you want young people to stay here. So we owe the University of Wisconsin a lot of money, I think, at the state level. We've taken $1 billion out of the university system since the Walker era. But this bill was a really tough pill to swallow. A lot of my constituents wanted it. A lot of them opposed it. I listened very, very carefully, and I asked a lot of questions of not just the athletic department, but of the administration. And ultimately, I just decided that I could not justify voting in favor of a bill that would put money in to this particular program. Essentially, it was structured as state taking over bonding authority, giving relief to the university athletic department, when we're not doing anything to make college more affordable for people. We are losing professors and graduate students to, you know, other public universities that are able to pay more. And we just have so many unmet needs in our public higher education system. And, I know that some people might not have liked that, but I just think it's important for my constituents to know that I am always going to ask questions. I'm going to be curious, and I'm going to make the best decision that I think I can based on what the interests of the whole state are.
Where are you today?
Today I'm in Madison, actually.
Ah,
lovely Madison.
A rare day. It's a beautiful day. I actually biked today, which is a special privilege, because I, you know, most days I'm in the car and we're going to Kewaunee or we're going up to Arcadia or somewhere wonderful. You know, I was just in St. Croix and River Falls and then La Crosse yesterday. I was just in Sheboygan and Manitowoc and Milwaukee over the weekend. It's really fun. I love this state, but I got to say, it is nice to be able to bike to work again.
So as you're running for governor, you have a unique experience where you're going to all over the state, every community, all sorts of places. You must find some hidden gems, you know, like, so this is our kind of Discover Wisconsin question. So What's one place you would recommend that we haven't heard of yet, people from Madison, that we got to hit sometime in Wisconsin?
Well, I will say Bearnstein's in Sheboygan, or in... Yeah, was it Sheboygan or Manitowoc? I'm a big ice cream person. So I love ice cream. I love maple syrup. I love our like great Wisconsin treats. And, when we pulled up, my assistant was like, this isn't where the Democratic Party meeting is. I said, no, we're going to have a milkshake for dinner. So I need a little something before I talk to this room full of energetic Democrats. And that was really, really delicious. He got a Shirley Temple milkshake, which he said was interesting, but delicious. And of course, my favorite thing to do is to go to supper clubs. I think it's just a lot of fun. And my husband is looking forward to his main first gentleman task, he thinks, is to help classify all of them, make sure that he visits all of them and does a really exhaustive search for the best supper clubs, what has the best old fashions. And, you know, he's committed to that important task.
If he needs a partner on that, I could help out. Just okay. Saying. It was, you know, it's funny. There was a Washington Post article not too long ago about, it was looking at data from VRBOs, and they couldn't understand why so many VRBOs in Wisconsin advertised supper, because they were all advertised, were close to supper clubs, and the data people just had no clue what a supper club was in Wisconsin.
So what's your favorite supper club? Do you have one?
Well, my favorite supper club was Trails Lounge in Portage, which unfortunately closed down a couple of years ago. But, you know, that's the supper club that I grew up going to. My stepdad is from Portage, and, you know, a lot of our extended family is up there in Columbia County. So, you know, that's the gathering spot. And my you know, my cousin's kids work there. And so it's just, that was a place that I loved. But, you know, there's not a supper club that you go to and you're like, darn, I wish I would have gone to a fast food place.
I don't know if we'll put this on the podcast or not, but I remember, Kelda, just one anecdote that impressed me about you. So maybe I should put it on the podcast, huh? Okay. But we ran into you, I think Rennie and I ran into you and your husband at a Wilco show. Do you remember that, Ed? I think it was at the Overture. Yeah. And I had, just coming to the Overture, I had walked by Frida's, which was that Mexican-themed restaurant. And I walked by and I had seen Robin Voss. I mean, the whole leadership team was in there. And I thought it was kind of funny that those guys were in Frida's just because of the politics. I think back to college and she was sort of this exploring left-wing artist from Mexico. And so I thought it was funny. And I remember I was kind of telling you about it quickly, and I probably was confusing you, but you're like, whoa, can't they have dinner? Or something like that. I mean, I'm paraphrasing from however many years ago.
That's a long time ago, Scott.
I guess they can have dinner. Not everything is about politics.
You know, I do think it is funny. You know, I'm a small business owner, and there are people who I think love working with my company because of our politics and because of our commitment to giving back to community. And then there are definitely people who I think, yep, they prefer to not work with me. And that's okay too. And, you know, I think a little kindness is good. We need to show each other some grace, but I will very much be celebrating the end of the boss era. And maybe I'll celebrate with a margarita.
I think Voss is probably celebrating the end of the Voss era too, actually.
Well, fair enough.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Kelda. We appreciate your time. We're really glad you're running, that the Democrats have a big group of talented people to choose from.
With a lot of diverse voices and perspectives.
Yeah, so best of luck to you, and go get them out on the campaign trail there.
Thank you. Great to be with you both.
Our theme music is by Tube Tester.